All right, y'all, welcome back to TKO, Technical Knockout, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With me, as always, my co-host, Jordan Patrick James.
What's up, baby?
We're going to recap Yusuf versus Barboza, and then later talk about the stacked Abu Dhabi card, Makhachev versus Volkanovski 2. Let's do it.
It is a pretty good card. Not too bad.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was kind of surprised. Like, you know, there's a lot of fights on this card that I thought were going to be good, and they ended up being good. But then there were some fights that I thought would might have been, like, you know, stinkers and ended up being pretty fucking awesome. So let's get into it. You know, let's start with the main event.
Holy, I was watching that with my girl, and it within the first, I was like, this is done. This is over. Like, this is going to be a quick main event. I don't know how he survived. Good on Herb Dean for letting that continue to a appropriate degree. It was getting borderline where if a rev would have stopped it, it would have been, I could have argued it, but it would have been hard to. But dude, good on him for coming back from that. That was close to 10-7.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, same deal. I was watching with my girl as well, and we were both like, oh man, he's fucked. Like, this guy's too fast, he's too powerful, he's, you know, picking his shots well. That was the scary part too, is that Sadiq wasn't just, you know, winging overhands and swinging wildly. He was stalking Edson and landing clean shots. And, you know, Edson's just a fucking dog, man. And we've known him to be a tough motherfucker, like, for the whole career he's had. You know what I mean? Like, you watch the Khabib fight, you watch the Lee fight, these fights he's getting the dog shit beat out of him. And he still has some, like, success in the third round, you know, or some success in the later round. So the guy is all heart. Like, if you can't put him out of there, then he's going to stay in there. You know what I mean? Like, you have to separate him from his senses. Otherwise, he's a dog. He's going to stay in there the whole fight.
Yeah, and it's such a... Because Sadiq did so well, and I can't really tell. He obviously did fade towards the latter rounds, but I can't tell how much it was of him fading or Barboza just getting that second, third win and being able to keep that consistency. Although, I do think Barboza probably could have finished him in the third.
Off of that wheel kick,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was questionable about his reaction toward the end of it or after he hit that wheel kick. But, you know, it was an entertaining fight, super entertaining. I'm interested. So Deke still has my attention, you know, sitting at a 13-3 record after a war like that with Barboza. You know, it's not going to do much to take shine off his star. So I'm still going to keep an eye on him going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is like a classic example of the you know, the MMA or even just combat fighting trope where a fighter comes in and tries to completely nuke the other guy in the first round and ends up getting exhausted and, you know, getting taught a lesson in that sense. So I think Sadiq is going to come out of this fight a lot stronger. He came out super hot and, you know, was able to put that beat down on Edson in the first round. Like you said, it could have been a stoppage. It could have been a 10-7 even, but it was definitely a 10-8 at least. And then he blew his load, man. You know, second round comes out and he looked absolutely exhausted. Barboza started landing those body punches, and I think that's the big story of the fight moving forward from that first round was Barboza's body work, his body kicks, his body punches, just, you know, landing those you know, cumulative blows to the midsection of Sadiq Yusuf and just took out whatever was left in his gas tank with those punches and kicks, you know. Then comes around the third round, he lands that wheel kick, and I thought he was going to finish him there, but it was towards the end of the round, so there wasn't a lot of time for him to you know, for that finish to materialize. But nonetheless, amazing performance from Barboza. It's fucking awesome to see these, you know, legends come back in fights that everybody wrote them off in. Even though the odds were, you know, not that far apart, I think they had Sadiq at like -160 or something like that. I think a lot of people were of the camp that, you know, this is like do or die for Edson. You know, he's fighting a younger, hungrier athlete and, you know, a guy that's a lot of people have heralded as maybe a future UFC champion at one point or another. I don't think that's necessarily off the table for Sadiq coming off this loss. I think if anything, he's going to come back stronger off of this. I think he's going to come back a little bit more reserved. And, you know, I'm excited to see where he goes from here. As for Barboza, I'm not really sure what he does from here. You know, I mean, I think you could put him against somebody like Calvin Kattar or, you know, one of these guys that are like lingering in the top 10 at featherweight. I definitely think he deserves a ranked opponent after that fight. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of ways you can take it. But nonetheless, that was an awesome way to cap off the night. There was some good fights throughout the card. Let's go down the list and get into them. Viviane Araújo versus Jennifer Maia. Did you catch this fight, Jordan?
Yeah, I caught the entire main or most of the main event. That was a more entertaining fight than I thought it would be. And Viviane,
who'd you think won?
She looked good. She looked really good. She convinced me more in her ability to get the job done.
See, I personally felt like Jennifer Maia won. Like, I was watching it live, and you know, maybe I have to rewatch it. But I thought Maia won the first and the third round. I know for sure Viviani won the second. She had that top control for most of the round. But the first round, I felt like Maia landed the cleaner punches. And then the third round, she seemed to just control the pace. And I think she got a takedown of her own in there, too. But at the end of the fight, she did get tripped and end up on the bottom for the last, like, 30 seconds. Maybe that swayed the judges. But I don't know. That seems kind of like a 2008 mindset, you know, or a Dominic Cruz mindset. You know, getting a takedown at the end of the round to win the fight. It's a little shaky for me in 2023. I think the damage should probably matter more than anything else. And I thought Maia did land more damage in the first and third round. But, you know, maybe I'm just a salty podcast host because I did pick Maia with a lot of confidence. I personally felt like she did enough to win. But, you know, in these fights where it goes to the judges, you really can't be too sure what's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a good fight. It was entertaining.
It
for
was
me.
A good fight.
Although I do in this next one, I think we have to change our little moniker for him. Instead of Death Taxes and Jonathan Martinez by decision, is Death Taxes and Jonathan Martinez by a leg kick TKO.
Yeah, honestly, an incredible performance from Martinez. Like, I thought that Giannis was going to give him a lot of trouble. I knew that the leg kicks are going to be a big factor. We talked about it on the preview pod that Martinez's leg kicks are nasty, and Giannis really does plant his stance to throw his punches. I thought maybe Giannis would catch him off of a couple leg kicks, like with his you know, foot up in the air, maybe knock him down with one of those. But Martinez just stayed so sharp, stayed on the outside, landed those kicks from distance, and eventually was just completely kicking Giannis's leg off of his body. It looked a lot like Robbie Lawler versus Melvin Manhoef, except, you know, Giannis didn't get the come from behind KO. But it's just insane when you see these leg kicks land so much, and the inside leg kick, and you see the guy's foot fly up almost damn near their own face. Like, it's insane, you know. Another example I can think of is Jose Aldo versus Jonathan Brookins in the WEC. If you watch that fight, Aldo is just punting this guy's leg up into the, like, it's almost hitting the top of the cage. Like, it's insane. Phenomenal performance from Martinez in a fight, a pick'em fight that everybody, you know, wasn't sure on who to pick. Martinez came out and clearly was the better fighter. I'm really excited to see where he goes from here. We've been fans of Jonathan Martinez for as long as we've been doing this podcast. And I think he's only continuing to grow in there. I think he's on like a six fight win streak now. That's incredible. So get this man a ranked opponent, man. He beat Saeed Nurmagomedov. He beat Adrian Yanez. He's beating these boogeymen of the division. Let's get him a top 10 fight. You know, I know it's bantamweight, so every fight is, you know, stacked, but I want to see Martinez climb those rankings, man. I think he's ready. As for Yanez, it sucks. He's probably going to take a lot of time off because I'm pretty sure his knee got, you know, separated from all the cartilage, because it looked really bad. Honestly, they could have stopped the fight a little bit sooner, but I know Giannis protested his last stoppage against Rob Font, even though he was definitely, you know, out on his feet in that fight. So, you know, maybe it was something on the ref that he didn't want Giannis to have that kind of doubt, and he certainly left no doubts because his leg was completely shattered by the end of the fight.
Yeah, and his corner was even calling him to switch stances, and he was like, no, I'm just going to keep it there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's that good from the southpaw stance. I think that's what was going on.
Well, it's
not
about being good. It's about protecting your knee at that point.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. You saw him, like, switch for a few seconds and then go back to orthodox. He's just not comfortable there. Yeah. I mean, it's tough, man. You know, a lot of things have to change for Giannis after this fight. He's got to, you know, kind of go back to his roots a little bit, you know, tighten up that stance switch. Maybe if he learns that, it'll be better. He'll learn how to check a leg kick or two, you know. I think the sky's still the limit for Giannis. He's still a young man. He's only 29, and he obviously has a lot of power in his hands and seems to be a very strong striker. But, you know, coming off this 2-loss skid, 2 KOs, and, you know, the first time he lost and then he gets knocked out in his next fight, or not the first time he lost, but the first time he lost in the UFC, it's tough, man. You know, I think he can still improve a lot. I think he can still come back. but I'm kind of afraid that he might go down that Miguel Baeza route where, you know, we see him beat up a bunch of people in the UFC and we're like, damn, this kid might be the next big thing. And then he just ends up going on like a KO streak of losses and, you know, ends up fizzling out that way. I hope that's not what happens to Giannis. I'm a big fan and I'd love to see him continue to grow in this division. But yeah, it's just a little bit of a tough skid for him. I think the time off is going to do him very well. Yeah. Michelle Pereira
got it done.
Flatlined Petrovsky early. Like
I was, I was, hoping for a much longer affair.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that they would at least get into a grappling exchange or two, or, you know, the fight would draw out. I saw this fight going the distance or at least towards the second and third where I thought Pereira would win. Like I picked him. I said that he'd probably get the knockout. But I think I in my head, I was picturing Petrovsky getting tired and then Pereira finishing him in the second or third. I didn't think he would damn near KO him off of the first or second exchange, you know? So very well done by Pereira there. He looks huge at middleweight. I think this is his weight class, man. I think he should stay here. You know, I don't know how he ever made 170. So I mean, Petrovsky's no small middleweight. I'd love to see Pereira fight up, maybe fight somebody like RoboCop or Mearshart or somebody like that and just work his way up, man. I think middleweight is a division that's ripe for the taking right now. And if Pereira can put together a nice string of wins, he might be looking at a title shot.
They got Usman and Chimaev fighting for, you know, a title fight at middleweight. Yeah. Apparently you gotta do much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about that fight, in the second segment, but yeah, that's insane. I can't believe that they made that for the, you know, the both guys have, they have one fight at middleweight combined in the UFC. But yeah, anyway, let's go down the rest of the card. Awesome performance from Michelle Pereira. A couple other fights I wanted to touch on. Christian Rodriguez versus Cameron Simon. This was a fight where I really felt like the weight miss for Rodriguez had a huge factor in his performance. He was able to bully Simon in a lot of clinch positions and a lot of, you know, ground positions. And seemed to just, you know, be really solid in there. I think they should force him to move up to featherweight after this. This is his third or fourth weight miss in the UFC. So, you know, this is clearly a pattern of his. Simon looked pretty good, but again, he just looked too small to really do any damage or any, you know, have any stopping power against Rodriguez. And, you know, I'm not trying to take away from Rodriguez. It's not like he was just big and muscly and, you know, just bullied him around. Like, the guy has really good technique. Rodriguez is really good. Like honestly, I'm very impressed with his mixed martial arts acumen, like the way he blends in his striking with his grappling, the way he blends in his kicks with his punches. He's very learned. You know, you can tell that the guy is a student of the game, you know, and he has the cardio, he has the chin, he has the power. So there's no reason why he shouldn't be a divisional mainstay for a long time. He just has to, you know, figure out what division he's going to be in, because clearly bantamweight is not easy for him to make. So, you know, good performance from Rodriguez, but is a little soured from that weight miss for me. I did pick Simon on the pod, but, you know, it is what it is. Darren Elkins got that fucking come from behind, or not come from behind victory, but stayed in there. He made it his fight, you know, and you can't, like, I don't know what TJ Brown was thinking, because he was putting some good work on Elkins on the feet, and then Elkins would go for a takedown. And let me just, you guys, I don't know if you saw this fight, Jordan, but Darren Elkins is like the scramble god, bro. Like anytime you get in a position that might be 50-50, he will end up on top. Like there was a moment in this fight, it was a beautiful scramble from Elkins where he shot for a takedown and Brown like stuffed it, got like a half Nelson almost, and kind of turned him over into like what looked like a crucifix position. And Elkins just straight up did a cartwheel on his head and ended up on his, like, in the Gary Goodridge type position where it's like a mounted crucifix from the back, and just turned out and ended up on top side control and stay there for damn near the rest of the round. And it was just fucking beautiful. Like if you get into the ground position with this guy, you will end up on the bottom. And if not, you're going to end up exhausted from him constantly switching and scrambling and, you know, turning his hips. And it's just amazing to see these old vets, you know, pull some rabbits out the hat on this card. It was pretty fucking sweet, man. I was really happy to see Elkins get that victory against a guy that a lot of people thought would just, you know, smoke him. It was very impressive. I'm very happy with his performance there. That was awesome. And then, you know, there was a couple other fights on this card that were pretty cool. Terrence McKinney got that 20-second knockout.
The motherfucker is not paid by the hour.
Nah, this is what he does, man. He comes out here. If you've heard of the guy that he's fighting, he might get finished. If you haven't heard of the guy he's fighting, he's gonna smoke him in the first round. Like, I think Terrence McKinney round one finish is one of the safest bets in the sport. It really just depends on who he's fighting, you know. And Brendan Morote was the victim this time. And he was a pretty solid fighter, man. Like, I looked up his regional record. He's a good striker. He's got a pretty well-rounded game. You know, he's fought the likes of guys in LFA and stuff like that. So it's not like he was, you know, some bum coming off the street. Like, but McKinney is just that dude, man. He, you know, threw that overhand right, missed, grabbed the collar tie, and just threw that knee up the middle and took the fight out of Brendan. And then just, you know, the rest of the punches were just academic. That knee was really what did the damage for him. You know, it could have been like a 7-second knockout, but, you know, he had to follow it up. So, you know, obviously easy win for McKinney, great performance. This is what he does. You know, anytime you see him on the card, it's a safe bet to bet that the fight will either A, go under, or B, he'll get the first round finish. Yeah. And then Chris Gutierrez put on a great performance against Alatong Haley, you know, just a masterclass of distance and leg kicks and, you know, pace and boxing, great performance there. Emily Ducote had a pretty solid victory over Ashley Yoder in a fight that was a lot better than it had any right to be. So that was awesome. Emily Ducote is definitely one to watch in this women's flyweight division. I think she's got a lot of, strawweight. She's got a lot of potential here. Yeah, overall, pretty solid card, man. There's some good finishes. There were some good fights. There were some great performances. We saw some old vets get victories over guys that they weren't supposed to, in Darren Elkins and Edson Barboza. And yeah, man, I'm really happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, you know, but honestly, all of that got overshadowed by the news that we got coming up next.
Oh yeah, big time, big news breaking. You know, UFC 294, last minute switch up. We talked about it before, but you know, we're gonna break down the card now. Charles Oliveira fell out of the fight with a cut, and Paulo Costa fell out of his fight with a staph infection. And now we're getting Kamaru Usman versus Khamzat Chimaev and Alexander Volkanovski versus Islam Makhachev.
I would argue more better.
I agree. I think it's a better card now. You know, we went from having two Brazilian bruisers who are both very entertaining fighters and would have been awesome fights, don't get me wrong, versus guys that were pound for pound number one and number two, you know, 2 years ago. So this is a very interesting shakeup here, and I'm excited to see how it all pans out, man, you know. Let's get down to the nitty gritty. We'll talk about the main event and then work our way down the card, because there's some other really cool fights on this card.
All right. Let's see. So first one, Islam versus Alexander II. The balls on Volkanovski.
Yeah. Huge. Massive.
Fucking, I don't know. He needs a wheel cart to carry. I saw that meme right afterwards of Volk's face on Randy from South Park, just wheeling around his balls. And I'm like, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, that seems accurate to me. Volk coming in on 11 days notice in enemy territory in Abu Dhabi. I don't know if it's the smartest move, because if he does lose this fight, I doubt that they're ever going to be able to materialize a third one. But
he's I've seen interviews where that he's saying exactly that. He's like, you know, if I lose this one, I'm probably not getting a rematch. I'm probably not going to get that lightweight belt as long as Islam is holding it. So he knows that this is you know, a very do or die situation, but I think that's why he thinks that he can get this done, because, you know, he's backed into a corner. You know, he has this dream, and it is do or die now for this dream. So we're going to see a very dangerous Volkanovski, not one that's trying to be cerebral and win the fight, you know, via decision, which I think we had last time. I think there was a lot of measuring up. I think Volk's going for the kill this time on a couple different aspects. One, because I think he thinks he can finish him, and two, because he knows he has to finish him.
Yeah, I think he said something like, I'm going for the finish this time, boys. And, you know, you got to figure he's not going to be able to submit Makhachev. So a knockout is the more likely option. And we saw him hurt Makhachev a couple times in that first fight. One of the best fights of all time, honestly, as far as the technical standpoint and, you know, the back and forth nature of the fight, it was phenomenal. Highly recommend you guys watch that fight if you haven't. It's on YouTube for free, so definitely check that out. But, you know, I don't know if we're going to get the same chess match this time. I kind of feel like there's a little more fire in it right now, I think Volkanovski might come out a little bit more reckless, which might be good for him. It might not be good for him, but I don't know. I kind of am feeling a finish on this fight.
I'm looking forward to seeing a Volkanovski going for the kill. I'm excited to see that.
Me too.
I am. Like, I don't think we've seen that in a while. I don't think we've seen that Volkanovski. You know, he's been so...
Well, I mean...
It's been all of his fights, the last one. You know, the last couple fights that he's had, it's been very... You know, he's the type of dude just like, oh, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to beat him. And, you know, we're going to be mates. I'm going to drink a shoey, all that. Like, now this seems like, you know, like I said, like, it looks like Volk's like the hunter now. You know, he's back in that predator mode. And I'm excited to see, you know, that more aggressive edge to him.
Yeah, I mean, his last fight against Yair, he definitely went out for the kill after getting tagged in that third round. He got hit with like a I think it was a head kick. And then was just like, you know what? Now I'm angry. And like, just put the beat down on him, landed a beautiful right hook off of a stance switch. And then just, you know, put the pressure on him, took him down and beat him up from the stacked guard. It was a really awesome finish. I just watched it the other day again. Volkanovski definitely looked like a different fighter after that fight. You know, you got to figure after wrestling with Makhachev and not getting submitted, he's probably very confident. I mean, he's already very confident in his grappling, but he's probably even more so now after, you know, winning grappling exchanges against the best grappler in the division above his natural weight division. So you got to imagine that he's coming into this fight as confident as all hell, you know. And I think it's gonna be really good for him. I think if he can come out and land some good punches early, stay on Makhachev early, I think, you know, he might be able to get a finish here. And if not, I think he'll be able to win three rounds and get a decision. If the judges will give it to him in Abu Dhabi, that's a different story.
It's true.
If Makhachev is, you know, way stronger now because he is going to have more time to rehydrate. We talked about it on the last pod, and I think it's still very prevalent, is that they have a longer window to rehydrate here in Abu Dhabi than they did in Perth, Australia. Crowd's going to be on Makhachev's side. I think there's a lot of things that both guys could learn from the first fight, but I do think that there's more that Makhachev could learn from the first fight than Volkanovski. Where Volkanovski, what he could learn from the first fight was more of like a mental thing, that he should have went harder in some positions, that he should have, you know, stayed smarter on some exchanges on the feet. For Makhachev, I think there's a little bit more of a technique change that he can make. I think the body kicks were massively useful in that first fight for him. I think they're free, you know. If Volkanovski catches a body kick, what's he going to do? He's going to wrestle him? Like, now we're in a wrestling exchange with Islam Makhachev? Good luck, you know. And what's the other alternative? Block the body kick with his hands, that leaves his head up open, or, you know, just eat the body kick, which he was happy to do in the first fight. He ate a few body kicks. And I think that Makhachev would be smart to go back to the well on that kick as this fight goes on, you know. The only really, you know, risk in throwing that back body kick from the southpaw position for Makhachev is that Volkanovski could land a counter off of it, which, you know, is very possible. It's very possible that Volkan land a counter off of it. But I do think that it's a pretty low risk move that's going to pay dividends for him in this fight, especially for Volkanovski coming in on short notice. I know he trains all year round, but he was not ready. He wasn't training for a 5-round camp right now, you know. So it's possible that, you know, maybe his cardio is a little bit compromised. Maybe that's why he wants to go for the finish so bad. He keeps talking about it because, you know, he knows that, you know, he might not be the most prepared for this fight. So he's trying to get him out of there early. That being said, Volkanovski is a phenomenal athlete, and I expect him to be in good shape regardless. You know, even just rolling off the couch, I'm sure he's in good shape. But yeah, I'm really excited to see how this fight shakes out. I don't know who's going to win, honestly. Who you got in this one, George?
You know, I got the great. I'm gonna ride with him to the day I die, man.
Yeah,
like, this is the type of stuff that makes me want Volk to win. You know, 11 days notice against the number one, or the pound for pound, you know, best in the world, against someone going in enemy territory. I love it. That's the type of stuff. That's the type of athletes that I will have seen in the UFC. You know, and it's a perfect segue to Kamaru Usman doing the same thing, going against fighting the boogeyman.
Yeah, it's insane, man. I mean, there seems to be the theme of the night. If you put a gun to my head, I'm probably going to pick Makhachev, probably by decision, I think. I don't know. He could get a finish in this fight, but I don't know. I just feel like the odds are really stacked against Volkanovski here. I'd be happy to be proven wrong.
I know with this thing going on at 1 p.m. in the States on my side of the country, I know that the odds are I'm going to watch this fight.
Yeah, word. Hell yeah. I hope so, man. I hope you enjoy it, you know? But yeah, let's go down the card. There's some other really good fights on here. The co-main event we just alluded to, Kamaru Usman versus Khamzat Chimaev. This is a fight that people were calling for when Khamzat was fighting at welterweight. They're saying that, you know, if he gets a few wins together, this could be like a very interesting matchup. And here we are getting it on 11 days notice at middleweight.
Yeah, see, that's the thing I'm not, you know, excited about. One of our subscribers had, you know, commented that Kamaru Usman is a little bit over the hill, which I would agree, but I don't think he's too far over. You know, he just came off of two losses to Leon Edwards. You know, the first one, it was a headshot kick, and then with the second one, it's just Leon Edwards, dude. He's become the champion that we know him to be. We've always known him to be. He's starting to feel there's no shame in losing those. So it's not like he's dead and on the street. So this is a very interesting fight, but I really would have loved to see a fully prepared Usman coming into this with the camp. But be that as it may, I still believe Kamaru Usman can present some trouble. I saw a stat the other day saying that he has a 97.3 takedown defense, and Khamzat has never been taken down. So it is an interesting matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, to that point of him being over the hill, I kind of understand where the commenter is coming from. You know, Usman did look really shopworn in that last fight. I mean, he's been slowing down for a couple of years now, honestly. You know, he talked extensively about his injuries and everything on the Joe Rogan podcast, that his knees are pretty much gone now. So, you know, in that first Leon fight, he was winning. It was a close fight, but he was winning. And then he got knocked out. And the second fight, it was, what, 5 months after he got knocked out? I felt like he didn't take enough time to recover after that first fight. Let me just confirm to see if the timeline is right in my head, because I remember it being very quick. So he got knocked out in August, and then he fought in March. So what is that, like 7 months? Okay, that's not too bad. But he did seem like very sluggish, very tentative in that second fight, probably because he knew that he got knocked out in the first one, and he knew that it could happen. And now it's been 7 months since that fight. I feel like, you know, he's probably a little bit more confident. He's probably more closer to how he can perform on his best day. I know he's coming out on short notice, but the guy is one of the best fighters we've ever seen in the octagon, so I'm not going to count him out of any fight. That being said, I think the big factor here is going to be how the striking plays out, because like you just alluded to, Usman has phenomenal takedown defense, like 97%. The only time he ever got taken down was in that first Leon fight. I remember it was in the first round. He got taken down off of a body lock takedown. That was the first time I've ever seen him get taken down. So it was, you know, very big feather in the cap for Leon. On the other hand, Khamzat Chimaev, obviously very hard to take down, Swedish wrestling champion and everything like that. Chimaev definitely has a little bit more of an explosive game on the feet, I would say. He throws some like looping power punches, whereas Kamaru is very tight, throws that jab, throws that cross, and that's really where he butters his bread, is with his 1-2 and his, you know, his 1-2-3. He's not much of a kicker. I think if he had a bit better of a kicking game, this would be a lot more interesting of a matchup. But given the short notice nature, given the weight class move up for Usman, I'm going to have to pick Khamzat Chimaev in this fight. You know, I want Usman to win. I want him to prove the doubters wrong. I want him to go out there and put the beat down on him, on Chimaev. I just don't know if it's going to happen. You know, I think we were able to see Burns really threaten Chimaev's grappling game with his submission attempts and his, you know, world-class jiu-jitsu. I don't think Usman has that same level of jiu-jitsu. He's really more of a wrestler than a jiu-jitsu player. So if he can defend the takedowns from Chimaev, if he can keep the fight on the feet, I think he is in a little bit better of a position. But Chimaev seems to be the more powerful puncher. He seems to be the more explosive athlete in general at this point. And I don't know. I kind of see Chimaev getting him out of there. Honestly, I think he might finish him by knockout, either first or second round, you know. we'll see what happens though.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if you know, how this is going to play out, you know, with two guys that are high level grapplers and that do love to grapple. You know, I'm curious if this is going to be a stand-up affair, or, you know, what Usman's plan going into this is going to be, if he's going to try and implement his wrestling and get to the better positions, you know, maybe not try to get that submission, but get to good control, you know, pepper in some good ground and pound, or if he's going to, feel comfortable trying to trade with Hamzat on the feet. I'm extremely interested to see how both of these guys are going to, you know, try to implement their strategy here, because they both, like I said, they both are grappler heavy, but how often do we see two grapplers negating it and it basically being a striking affair?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the classic tale of grappler versus grappler. You get a shitty kickboxing fight, you know? I'd like to see them scramble. I'd like to see them wrestle with each other. I don't know if it's going to happen. I think Chimaev might be landing some early punches on the feet. And, you know, he's shown to have some serious power at middleweight, putting out Jared Meerschaert in like 30 seconds or whatever it was. So, I mean, I don't know, man. We'll see how it all shakes out. There's just too many question marks on this fight for me to confidently pick one way or the other. But I think that the smart pick is Chimaev, given the, you know, age, given the explosiveness, given the weight class. Yeah, I think it's a tough fight for Usman. And that's why we are so, you know, what's the word? Like, that's why we applaud him so much for taking this fight and taking it on short notice against, you know, what is essentially the boogeyman of both middleweight and welterweight. I'd love to see Hamzat fight more often, but it seems like the UFC wants him to fight in Abu Dhabi mostly. I get it, but yeah, we'll see what happens. You know, I just think Hamzat has too many things on his side here, like Makhachev, so I'm gonna go with him. Another couple fights on this card that are really interesting. We got a light heavyweight, you know, essentially a title eliminator here against Magomed Ankalaev and Johnny Walker. Maybe not a title eliminator, but both guys are right there at the top of the division. Ankalaev, obviously the wrestling aficionado coming out of Dagestan, has pretty good punches and kicks on the feet, but really more of a one-shot guy. He'll like to throw a pot shot and walk and step back and look at his work. It's cost him in the past. It cost him the fight against Blachowicz, where he didn't wrestle early enough. Ended up being a draw. Johnny Walker, on the other hand, very similar to Michel Pereira in the sense that he came in the UFC as a wild man, and has since kind of tapered down his game a bit and, you know, kind of went down to the fundamentals that made him that he was able to find success with when he was using all the smoke and mirrors of being a wild man. But at the end of the day, he has a very strong right hand. He has a very strong Muay Thai clinch. He has good leg kicks. He has good distance control and good movement on the feet. He's a great athlete. He does have a bit of a suspect chin. I don't think it'll come much into play here because Magomed is not the biggest power puncher. He's got a nice front kick up the middle that he took Dalcho Lungiambula out with. But besides that, we really haven't seen that kind of like, you know, power striking come from Ankalaev. He's definitely more of a grappler. That being said, he could for sure just wrestle Johnny Walker into the ground if he wanted to. He could take him down and beat him up on the ground. But Johnny Walker is a huge athlete. He's a great fighter, and he might be able to land some knees or elbows or something in tight that makes Ankalaev think twice about going for the takedowns. And in that event, if that does happen, I think Johnny Walker might get this done, dude. I think he might stay on the outside. I think he might land some better punches and kicks and, you know, maybe fight a very slow kickboxing fight with Magomed Ankalaev, where you end up at the end of it like, you know, Johnny Walker won two rounds. And yeah, I'm gonna go with Johnny Walker here as the underdog pick. I think he's brewing up for an upset. I think the UFC is not a fan of Magomed Ankalaev at this point, and I don't know what they're gonna do with him. But I think that this fight is tougher on paper, or tougher than it looks on paper.
I refuse to bet on Johnny Walker. He is too. Too inconsistent for me. I get the play around the jovial attitude, but it seems to cost him entirely too much. And I do agree that he's shored up his style, but I think only enough to stop taking, you know, so much damage. He's just too inconsistent for me.
I get it.
I think, you know, counter to your point, I think the UFC would like to see the home team go 5-0 in this main event. So I believe that Ankalaev has the advantage in this in several areas. I wouldn't be surprised to see Johnny Walker get it done, because when he's on, he is certainly on, and, you know, everything is kind of clicking. But there are times that I feel like his skill level and his for lack of confidence or charisma or whatever you want, are on different wavelengths, right? They're not in line to where it's producing the kind of flow state that I think he's trying to go for. I think a lot of times it ends up costing him.
Yeah, I think that's it's a great observation. Walker is unpredictable, and that's why it's hard to confidently pick him. But I don't know. I'm feeling that. I feel that upset, you know? Going down the card, there's some other fights that are really interesting. On the main card, Ikram Alaskarov versus Warley Alves. Warley Alves going up to middleweight on short notice. Another badass on this card. Ikram Alaskarov is a guy that's only lost to Khamzat Chimaev and has a whole bunch of Sambo credentials. And, you know, it just seems to be new shit on the block. So I'm going to pick him pretty confidently here. Saeed Nurmagomedov, I really don't know enough about his opponent to pick one way or the other.
I'd go with him. If they got a Nurmagomedov in Abu Dhabi on the main card and you don't know who the other guy is, I'm going to say that you should probably go with him.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I mean, for sure. But, you know, Saeed is a little bit of a wild man.
I would legitimately on this one, you know, I would say put a parlay on for all five of the, you know, Abu Dhabi hometown guys winning. You know, I think they're not saying that they set it up intentionally. I think they do try to stack the odds in the favor if it's a big event, like in the country, you know, for, you know, I think Canada went
big time.
You know,
yeah, 5-0, 6-0.
And that was more unlikely than, you know, something like this. So, you know, I think I always take that into account when laying my bets.
Yeah, I mean, the hometown crowd is definitely not something to ignore. You know, it's a huge factor.
Especially when I got Abu Dhabi money, dog.
Yeah, and I mean, regardless of if they're paying off the judges or not, if the crowd is screaming every time the hometown fighter lands a punch and is silent when the other guy lands a punch, it's very easy for a judge to miss the work from the other fighter.
That's why,
you know?
That is why I believe the judges should be off in a soundproof room just watching the fights.
But at the same time though, you kind of do want to hear the impact of the shots. So it's tough. It's a tough line to cross, you know? Because sometimes a punch will look like it lands and then you hear it and it's just like a slap on the chest, you know? But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting debate for sure about the judging in MMA in general. And the UFC in particular, I think we could learn a lot from the 1FC judging criteria. But anyway, there's a couple other fights on this card on the prelims that are really cool. You know, we got to talk about my boy Javid Basharat. He's fighting Victor Henry, who is a, you know, complete energizer battery. The guy keeps throwing punches and kicks and moving forward for as long as you're going to be in the fight with him. Very tough fighter here. He's fighting Basharat, who we know to be a clean, technical, range-finding opponent. Has a good ground game as well, has a good arm triangle, has good kicks on the feet, is a very smart and cerebral fighter. And they have him at minus 600 in this fight, which I kind of feel like is a little too much. Henry is, you know, not a world beater by any means, but he's been in there with some tough guys, you know, and he lost to Rafael Santau in his last fight, and a fight that Rafael Santau was able to slow down the pace and have a classic Santau performance where, you know, he throws 15 strikes around and lands the harder ones. If Basharat can replicate that kind of game plan, he can have some great success against Henry. But Henry is a dog, man. He's a live dog at plus 400. He's a very live dog. And, you know, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he is the busier fighter over three rounds and lands a few big punches or kicks and makes Basharat a little nervous. Basharat, I believe, is still undefeated. I've never seen him lost. Yeah, he's still undefeated. Definitely somebody that should go for the finish a little bit more often. And I feel like that might, you know, trouble him in his UFC career as it develops. I don't know if it's going to be an issue here. Henry's pretty hard to finish regardless. But I don't know. I just worry that Henry might be a little bit too much too soon for Basharat and might be able to get a victory here where in an underdog spot where a lot of people think that he's supposed to lose.
Well, yeah, especially if you end up in a situation where you're reading the odds or you might buy too much into the odds and start thinking, okay, this guy is a plus 300, plus 400, plus whatever. And you're like, I should win. You know, sometimes that can play into a fighter's psyche, especially being, you know, undefeated. You know, there's a lot of factors for this for an upset.
Yeah, I mean, when they announced this fight, in my head, I was like, okay, yeah, Basharat will be like a minus 200 probably, maybe a minus 175. And the odds came out minus 600. I was like, what the fuck? Like, what are they seeing that I'm not seeing that they think Henry is going to get smoked like that? You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong, Basharat's a great fighter. I love him. You know, we've been talking about him on this pod for a long time. but he's beaten guys like Trevin Jones and Mateusz Mendoza in the UFC. Not the best level of competition. He does have that victory over Tony Gravely, who also lost to Victor Henry. So, I mean, it's just like, I don't know, man. It's a tough fight for me to confidently pick Bachrat in, and I typically always confidently pick Bachrat. So, I don't know. I'm interested to see how it shakes out. I do see the fight going the distance. I think both guys are very tough and smart, and I think this fight will end up going the distance. I think it's just going to be a matter of who's the more active fighter, who lands the bigger shots, and there's a high likelihood that Victor Henry is that guy, you know? That being said, Bachrat could slow down the pace like Rafael Sunsau did to Henry. He could, you know, make him think before he enters and take him down whenever he does enter, and he could have a very clean performance here and win 30-27. Don't get me wrong, but I just think Henry's too live of a dog for the odds, and I'm going to put a little tenner on him. Another fight that the odds are a little strange in is Abu Azaitar versus Cedric Dumas. We talked about Cedric Dumas in the past. I think he's not UFC level caliber opponent. He has a victory over Cody Brundage in his last fight, who, you know, I'm not even going to talk about Cody Brundage. He doesn't deserve it.
What an asshole.
Yeah, what a piece of shit. You know, all my homies hate Cody Brundage. But Dumas was able to get that victory over him after, you know, Brundage infallibly went for the guillotine way too many times. And he's fighting Abu Azaitar, who is a pretty powerful striker at middleweight, has a pretty well-rounded game. Did get in some hot water because the bag of potatoes incident. I don't know if you heard about this, Jordan.
No, what? Bag of potatoes?
So Otman, Abu Azaitar has a brother in the UFC. His name is Otman Azaitar. And he was fighting in Abu Dhabi 1 year or 1 week, whatever. And somebody snuck into the hotel and handed him a bag of, you know, nobody knew what it was. People were suspecting that it was drugs, that it was, you know, PEDs, something like that. Maybe alcohol that they're trying to smuggle in through the Abu Dhabi, you know, like hotel system and stuff. And they claim that it was just a bag of potatoes. I don't know. It seems a little strange to me. But that being said, since that incident with the maybe it was PEDs, maybe it wasn't, both Azaitar brothers have had some, you know, some some trouble in the UFC and have not been able to replicate their early success that they were able to do as soon as they came in.
USADA's gone, so.
USADA is gone, and they're in Abu Dhabi.
We're about to see people get knocked out in like 13 seconds on average.
I think, honestly, I do feel like the odds. So they have Dumas as a minus 250, and as I start coming back at plus 190, I feel like it's ridiculous. Like, I don't think it makes any sense. I would put money on Azaitar if I were you, listener, because I think that those odds are crazy. And with a hometown crowd, with, you know, more time to rehydrate, with what could be a dirty drug test coming back later, Azaitar should get the victory here. You know, Dumas is not that guy. He has pretty good striking on the feet. He's relatively smart on the ground, but Azaitar just seems to be the bigger, powerful, more technical fighter. And I'm just shocked that they have him as an underdog here. And then there's Nathaniel Wood fighting against Muhammad Naimov. Muhammad Naimov is a solid fighter coming into the UFC here. All of his losses have been by decision. And Nathaniel Wood at featherweight, he looks so fucking good, man. I'm really happy with his move up to featherweight. He's beaten Charles Rosa. He's beaten Charles Jourdain. He beat Andre Feely in his last fight, which was the most impressive. And all those wins come by decision. He's a smart fighter. He likes to, you know, use his wrestling, use his jab, use his leg kicks. And I expect him to find a decision victory here against Muhammad Naimov, the newcomer. Yeah, besides that, Shahrubutin Magomedov is making his UFC debut against Bruno Silva. I think that's a great fight. This guy is a actual crazy person. There's like videos of him online beating people up in the street and shit like that. Definitely an asshole, 100%, but seems to be a good fighter. Also a sore loser. But, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. I think Bruno Silva is a very live dog in this fight. He's a tough fighter. He, you know, went the distance with Alex Pereira, got that knockout over Brad Tavares, coming off of the loss over Brendan Allen in a fight that he really got washed out in. That was only 4 months ago. So there's a good chance that he does lose this fight, but I do think he's a live dog here. But yeah, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out. Altogether, this is a fucking awesome card, man. There's a lot of really good fights on here. There's some, you know, badass late short notice replacements. There's some, you know, potential for bangers, potential for easy finishes, potential for awesome fights. We didn't even talk about Tim Elliott versus Muhammad Makhachev. That's going to be a great scramble fight. Trevor Peak is back. He's going to throw some standing hammer fists. I'm sure of it. It's going to be cool, man. I'm excited to see how it all shakes out.
And a super early card for us here in the States, man. You can't ask for much more.
Yeah. Let's go down to betting slip real quick. Who you got, Jordan?
All right. For this UFC 294, my betting slip is the great Volkanovski money line. I'm going to side with Chimaya for the co-main event. I have Mahmoud in the against Johnny Walker coming out. And I think that's all I'm going to have, as well as Saad Nurmagomedov. I think he gets it done as well. I might as well just go ahead and put a side parlay on all of the hometown Abu Dhabi fighters as far as a little parlay. I think that might end up paying off.
I think that's a good pick. Let me go down my betting list real quick. I'm going to take Makhachev by decision. I'm going to take Khamzat Chimaev money line. I'm going to put a little bit on Johnny Walker. I feel like he might get it done. And then I'm going to put on Victor Henry and Abu Azaitar. I know these guys are underdogs. I just feel like the odds are a little crazy for me. And I'll take Nathaniel Wood by decision as well. I like Nathaniel Wood by decision. I think that might be my new death taxes phrasing. But yeah, we'll see what happens, man. I'm excited to see how things shake out. I do think that there's upset potential in the co-main and main events. I think Usman or Volkanovski can get it done. I'm not saying that they're going to get washed out. But I just think the odds are stacked in Chimaev and Makhachev's favor. And I expect them to perform in front of their hometown crowd. So if this was at the Apex, I might be picking differently, but I think the crowd and location really does have a lot to do with it. So I'm excited to see how it shakes out. Thank you so much for listening, TKO Nation. I appreciate y'all. Thank you for 100 subs on YouTube. Phenomenal. Great stuff. We love you. We love you guys so much. Appreciate you. Stick with us. You know, we're going to keep churning out some great content for you. And, you know, hopefully y'all make some money fucking with us. You know what I'm saying? Fuck with your boy.
That's what we do.
Appreciate y'all. Take it easy.